the Detroit Institute of Art, the National Gallery of Zimbabwe, the Allen Stone Gallery in New York, and the Little Rock Art Center in Arkansas. Romancing the Figure exhibition hours are Monday through Wednesday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., Friday from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., or by appointment. For further information, visit hfcc.edu or call 313-845-6485.
If it's indie rock and pop you're after, tune in to One Chord to Another on 89.3 WHFR.FM every Tuesday night from 10 p.m. until midnight. You might just hear your new favorite band. That's One Chord to Another on the station making waves, 89.3 WHFR.FM.
We've been talking to people about the work being done at Child Fund, an international organization devoted to helping children living in poverty. Here's what they had to say.
Child Fund is there. They've been there for 70 years.
I love the work that they do by building a school where girls can get an education and not have to be married off at such a young age. It's amazing that Child Fund is caring in that way.
They always seem to be looking for a long-term solution.
Visit childfund.org. Child Fund. Innovative solutions, one child at a time.
Some of America's bravest warriors are returning home wounded. Here's one of them.
My name is Norberto Lara. While I was on a combat patrol, a rocket propelled grenade took my arm off at the shoulder. I was discharged from the Army and I've been working with the Wounded Warrior Project since 2007. You don't have to be severely wounded. A lot of guys have post-traumatic stress disorder. Being able to share your story kind of helps you wrap your mind around what did happen over there. My name is Norby, and yes, I do suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, but I'm okay.
Don't suffer in silence. Contact WoundedWarriorProject.org.
If you want to change the world, then you have to change yourself. One of the best places in the Metro Detroit area to improve your life is Henry Ford Community College. Henry Ford Community College offers dozens of degree and certificate programs, plus the opportunity to network with your peers and potential employers. Taking classes at Henry Ford Community College gives you the freedom to take your own career path and opens up an infinite number of career possibilities. Additionally, day and evening classes allow you the flexibility of building a schedule tailored to your busy lifestyle. So change the world, change yourself at Henry Ford Community College. For more information on admittance and financial aid and class schedules, call the Henry Ford Community College toll-free number at 1-800-585-HFCC. Again, that's 1-800-585-HFCC.
This is WHFR Dearborn.
Welcome to the Heights News and Views, a talk show program part of the WHFR Tuesday Forum series of talk show programs presented from 1 to 2 p.m. The Heights News and Views is a program presented live on the fifth Tuesday of any month. The program is devoted to interviews with prominent individuals on issues important to the residents of Dearborn Heights. You are listening to WHFR 89.3 FM Dearborn, making waves from the campus of the Henry Ford Community College located in Dearborn, Michigan. You can hear all of our archived forum programs on the internet by going to our website at whfr.fm. Select the option Forum. Wait for the option to select that Tuesday date for the program that you wish to hear by selecting the desired date. Now, to your host and director, Ned Apigian, for today's program.
Thank you, Melissa. It's always a pleasure to hear your voice. Today's guests are from the Community Economic and Development Department. It's always a mouthful, especially when you start using the initials. The director is Ronald Amon and his assistant, Chris Klimchuk. Get a pencil and paper out. There's a lot of interesting facts you might want to write down. The first question I want to ask is, people wonder where on earth we get the money that people hear about what we spend. And it's a complicated formula, but Ronald, why don't you take a crack at that?
Yeah, sure, Ned. Thank you. Well, thanks for having us. This gives us an opportunity to get the word out, which we're always trying to do, about our programs that are available to the residents in Dearborn Heights, one of which is the Community Block Grant. And that's the money that you're referring to. Where does that money come from? Comes from the federal government. Comes from the taxpayers all across America. There are formulas for each, a couple of formulas used to develop the amount that is allocated to each municipality across the country.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
In the middle?
Go ahead.
Does everybody get it?
No.
No. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's
sadly. happily, Dearborn Heights does, and Dearborn Heights has been getting it now for about 37 years, Chris?
Yes, Ron, and thank you, Ned, for having me as well. Yes, since 1975, Dearborn Heights has received the Block Grant Program every year but one year. It is an annual grant program that we have to reapply, so it's not an automatic award of funds. We have to apply every year, and that's the process we're in right now, January through May for our July 1 fiscal year.
Okay, let's try to explain that formula so people get an idea. Like, before you explain the formula, what was the amount of money in 1975 and what is it today? I assume it changes. It goes up and down, and lately it's been going down, so people can have an idea.
Yeah, certainly that's the case. The amount does change. In fact, the amount has changed. I've been the director for the last couple of years, and it's changed every year that I've been the director.
It's changed down.
The first year it went up about $120,000.
Yeah, actually closer to maybe $200,000.
$200,000? Okay.
But what was the total amount?
That very first year was like
a little over 1.2 million.
And today is what?
It's less than a million.
Well, our proposed for this coming fiscal year 12 is 850,000 area.
Okay.
And that's based on the appropriation given from the federal government in the budget. Mm-hmm. Although the formulas remain the same, the appropriated amount can change, and that's what determines our ultimate amount.
Now, in 1974, how was it? We're not going to forget. We want to talk about the formula. What was it?
Well, since neither of us were here, all I can do is look at what's happened in the last couple of years.
It has always been around a million, or is it a million plus?
Yeah, it has. It has been. It has been
okay,
around
so
a million
each year. It's been a million plus to characterize it conceptually, mm-hmm. and now it's something less than a million, 850,000.
Considerably less.
Okay. Yeah. Now explain this formula so our listeners will have some idea.
Yeah. I'm going to let Chris. Chris is actually the grants coordinator for the department, which means he handles the money part of it. Okay.
I realize it's complicated, but
it is a complicated formula. But Chris will simplify it for you and give you a real good idea as to how.
Before you do that, does anybody know if our friends in Dearborn get it?
Yes,
they do.
Okay, Dearborn qualifies as.
Yeah, actually, they get more than we do.
I'm sure it's a bigger place.
No.
Yeah, actually, a number of the surrounding communities receive block grant funds to be used for different projects. So.
Okay, let's talk about that formula.
Mm-hmm. Okay, as you said, I'll try to summarize that. Basically, there's two types of entities that would receive the dollars. One is an entitlement community or a non-entitlement. That's based on population. 50,000 or up, you become an entitlement. And that means you receive the funds directly from the Department of Housing and Urban Development.
Well, that's interesting. Mm-hmm.
And other entities that don't meet either the population criteria or other ones would have to receive their money from the state as a sub-grantee.
So we're probably right there as an entitlement program. We're plus 50,000.
We've always been above, and we've always been a direct entitlement.
What's community. Our population today after the last census? Do you remember that?
It's right about 50,000. We actually lost about between 400 and 500 people the past 10 years.
Yeah, I heard the lower number, but I can't believe it's 50. I thought our population was closer to 57.
2000 census was around 58,000, but the new census information obviously is coming out in a couple of months. So
we should be 57 or 56.
Well, we're between 57 and 58.
Okay, that's great. Let's go back to the formula.
Well, actually, there's a couple formulas they use. It's called Formula A and Formula B. Again, I'll try to simplify. There's different demographic and census data they use to determine that.
More people, more money, essentially.
Well, not necessarily. Population is a part of the formula.
More poor people.
And aside, I don't want to get into too many quick data here and kind of, scramble everyone's brain, but Formula A takes into consideration population, poverty, and overcrowding. Again, that's assigned a percentage of the 100%. Mm-hmm. Formula B takes in growth lag, poverty, and pre-1940 housing. So they take those two formulas, and the entitlement would receive the greater of the two formulas, whatever that computes to.
So they average the two formulas, or they do the median of the two formulas?
It would be, no, they do Formula A and Formula B, and then you would get the greater of that amount.
Whichever one.
Right. Whichever, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, okay.
I told you it was complicated, that they're going back
I'm
to
sure
1940.
It's more... Yeah, going back to 1940 in Dearborn Township, I don't know what you would find.
Before you were born.
Actually, not in my case. But.
Well, Dearborn Heights became a city in 63, so that might not be a part of a form. Yeah, that would help Dearborn Heights. But
what would they be looking for before 1940? How much poverty? How much population?
No, that's just the housing, pre-1940 housing.
What are they looking for?
Well, that would be
There's
the age
housing.
Of the housing.
Yeah.
And in some communities, obviously around the country, pre-1940 housing would be a greater factor than it is for Dearborn
There'd
Heights.
There'd be more of it.
Okay. Right.
So, all right, now, because I want to deal with concepts at least for the first 15 minutes. After that, you can show what we do with this money.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a part of this money that you administer for other people, churches and other kinds of organizations, which I found interesting when I heard about that in your report that I ran across. What essentially do you do with this money? There's two categories. You refurbish things.
Right.
You buy things. What?
The biggest portion of the grant almost always is spent on our home rehabilitation program. That is...
So it's housing rehabilitation primarily.
That's correct. We probably spend 50% of the total grant doing that each year.
Okay, well, that's... It's not all of it. You had something about maintenance on your list of, was it water?
Oh, yeah.
Other
projects that can be used with
that typically would be done
in
the city budget, city infrastructure, or from millages?
No.
Well, we get water millages.
Mm-hmm. No, we don't pay for water, but we can pay for the pipes that the water travel through or the sewer.
Well, that's what I meant. I wasn't thinking about actually this people pay for the water one way or another in the water charge and
the
sewage charge.
Well, actually, the
city
pays for the water, and then the people reimburse the city.
Yeah, is that how it actually works?
Yeah.
We give the county money, then try to collect it from the people?
Right, so when somebody has a leaky faucet and they end up with a $1,000 water bill in 2 months and they come and complain that there's some problem with the meter. And
we already paid for it.
We already paid for it.
Oh, that's an interesting fact, Jay. We got to remember that.
not only the water coming in, but the water going out is even another issue. So
that's true.
Yeah.
They get you coming and going. Then.
Those of us that have sprinkler systems object to paying for the water that doesn't go into the sewer system. Well, that's an interesting fact. So aside from housing, you can get involved in replacing water lines.
Yeah.
But it has to be in you guys have a property zone. You got zones where people are poorer than others, and it can only be applied in these zones.
That's
Why don't
correct.
You explain that?
Yeah,
you got a map of the cities.
Yeah, we do. You're referring to the low to moderate income areas of the city, and there are several of them. It's not like it's one particular area.
Right. Those are the areas that to get the help.
Yeah, those are the areas that we can go in and replace, for instance, water mains. This past winter.
Other than water mains, what else? Pavement?
Sewer lines, sidewalks.
Sidewalks.
Lighting, city infrastructure.
Lighting. My God, that's a big help to us in the city.
It is. Yeah, it is. It's a huge help. What we do with that money is actually we...
So it pays
we
to
leverage
be...
the general fund.
I was going to say, we need the poorer sections of the city, it seems. Anyway.
Well, actually, we are expecting them to probably expand when the new census data is finally.
Well, after we do our break, it's now almost quarter after. Since we covered that conceptually, I found it very interesting. The what we do with individuals. But right now I'm going to take a minute to let our listeners know who in the world we're talking to and why. You are listening to the Heights News and Views as part of the station's weekly talk show format on Tuesdays from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on WHFR, making waves on 89.3 FM from the student radio station broadcasting from the Henry Ford Community College, located in Dearborn, Michigan. Our guests today are Ronald Amon, director, and his assistant, Chris Klimchuk, of the Community and Economic Development Department of the City of Dearborn Heights. And I am your host, Ned Apigian, bringing you this program, The Heights News and Views, on the fifth Tuesday of any month. Now back to our questions of Director Amon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now that we found out that the city budget gets a big help, especially in those areas.
Getting back real quick, too, to that low to moderate income area, that's approximately 12 square miles of the city. There are five areas in the...
What percentage? To me, it looks like it's almost at least 25 to 30% of the...
It was approximately 25% of the city
is in
low mod areas that are scattered throughout the city, correct?
Yeah. It's an interesting, and only the improvements can be there. But the housing improvements that people can apply for based on their level of income has to be in those areas as well?
No.
No. They can be everywhere.
Anywhere.
Okay, let's
in the
talk.
City.
Yeah. There's one thing, being an architect and a planner, I always thought this term block grant program, I always associated it with actually blocks and a program to fix the blocks. You know, we're blocking out parts of this city and we're going to fix it. It's a public need and a public desire.
And
so
actually,
it was always a misnomer to me.
Well, it actually,
well, in other words, we'll fix the cabinets in your house, providing your level of income is...
The word block actually refers to city blocks.
That's what...
I had a quick question. Is it Jay?
That's Jay.
Jay Koronek, suffering from a little laryngitis, but... I was just wondering, just to step back briefly, because this is based on... economic level and population and so on, do you expect that these block areas of so-called low mod areas are going to be increasing in size with the next census, or when does that calculation kick in? Is that
well,
every year at a certain point they re-identify the areas and the and therefore the money too, because the money is based on the size and the population, right?
Yeah, it's annual.
Actually, that's correct.
Yeah,
the initial block grant designation gets changed with the census every year, and the level of the low to moderate income within those low mod areas is reviewed annually, sometimes semi-annually, because the levels of income that have to be met in order to qualify for block grant funds can change from one year to the next.
And with the economy these days, we would assume that unless there's a big turnaround in employment, that these areas will get larger. Is the federal government government's providing the block grants, right?
That's
where the money's coming from.
That's correct.
Are they declining? Is that a decreasing amount? Is there the legislature in Washington, D.C. cutting back? Are they increasing the percentages at all? What's the sort of hope there in terms of that?
Yeah, actually, we took a sizable hit this year
with
block grant money.
Mm-hmm.
About 18% this year.
If you can philosophy, and I know it's not your job, but the philosophy of block grants is a way to get the federal government money that is being collected from people all over the country to come back to the communities in a way that they can direct it. That you have that local input and you can make these choices, and they couldn't really figure out how to best spend the money at the federal level. So the block grants are very, very important to decrease that. It seems like taxpayers are not, they're losing out on the dollars they're paying to the federal government to have the block grants cut back. But I don't know if you want to talk about that at all. I know it's not specific. That's a political thing, but it does affect your job and your work for the city.
I don't mind talking about that. Go ahead, Chris. You had something to say.
Yeah, over the 30-year period, the ebb and flow of the appropriation obviously changes with the leadership at the federal level. Mm-hmm. And you are incorrect in saying that the monies that come back to the cities, the Community Development Block Grant Program, I believe offers a lot of flexibility as compared to other grant programs, where the local municipalities can dictate by the local policy, as long as it's within the federal regulations of the program, to allocate those monies to programs and projects they feel are the greatest need for the community. But that amount does change every year, and that's the challenge of making a workable budget based on our priority needs for the city.
If you're going to do something that involves sewer repair or roads, I imagine you bring that before the council?
Yes, we would bring that
but
to the
administration.
But you're
repairing, when the stuff Mrs. Morris does in your office, that rehab stuff, that doesn't come before the council. You allocate it based on need, whether the people qualify.
Exactly.
Okay.
I've often said to council,
what do we care?
We answer to a higher
authority. Which is?
The mayor?
The voters.
The federal government.
Yeah, they have requirements as to who qualifies.
That's correct.
Before we go into that, I know you guys want to say something about the history of this. Why don't you... from the beginning of the program, I know you and people may find that interesting. Why don't you want to take it by year or decade or what, Chris?
Well, we touched on it briefly. The program began in 1974. The city received their first monies in 1975. Over the years, and we did touch on that, the amounts have changed. Obviously...
Why not before 1974?
That's just when
the block grant program didn't exist.
It didn't exist. It was established at the federal level in that year. Correct.
Was that Ronald Reagan when he was president, or did Jimmy Carter slide in there?
That'd be 74. Another 10 years later.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
So, 74 would have been
Carter, maybe.
Yeah.
No, Ford.
Gerald Ford.
Ford.
Yeah.
Okay. During the bicentennial of Jerry Ford.
Right.
Nixon was out and Ford was in. Mm-hmm. So the government was still primarily Republican, I guess. when the block grant program began.
Well, the president was.
The president, at least. Okay, yeah. The
Congress wasn't.
Congress wasn't.
You got to remember the Republican Party then is not the Republican Party of today. Yeah. You know, they were presently being accused as dastardly people continuing the New Deal. You know, now the idea is to destroy the New Deal remnants. So.
Well, we like to talk about the facts of the program and happy when we get the dollars, obviously, whatever those may be. But you know,
what else goes with the history there?
Well, I wanted to bring up something too. Is when we talk about the varying amounts every year, and say we got 800,000 back in those years. I'm going off the top of my head. I haven't seen those figures in a while.
It was a different 800,000.
Right. That was worth more than 800,000 is today based on inflation, et cetera. So you can see that even though the appropriation at the federal level may stay around $4 to $4.5 billion, say, in the last few years, those dollars are not worth the same. So we might get $1 million 1 year, but be able to do less with it the next year because of costs. So even though we've received a generally consistent amount over those years, that affects our ability to do projects with the cost of the money and the projects.
This past year, actually, this 18% hit that we took has dropped the federal block grant allocation to its lowest point ever. It's about $3.2 million now.
Billion
dollars.
The millionaires need more tax breaks, and somebody's got to pay for it.
Yeah, exactly.
It has to be the poor, I guess. Anyway.
One of the interesting facts, too, is that with our last review of the household income limits,
okay, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. What are these requirements?
Mm-hmm. Well, here's a table that's available actually on our website.
You're gonna have to read it. You want to identify your website so those that are interested in going on the internet, you have.
You can go to the city's website,
which is
DearbornHeights.com.
It's quite a long address.
That'll get you to it.
We'll put in a plug, obviously, everywhere for Google. Google City of Dearborn Heights. It's probably the first or second choice there, and it'll direct you quickly to our website.
CI.dearborn-heights.mi.us. USA, North America, and the Northern Hemisphere.
Just Google it.
That's why we have to have wraparound business cards.
Okay.
The chart for household income limits to apply for our home rehabilitation are available on our website there. For a household of one person, the upper limit is presently $36,600. Not bad. Actually, it's not.
Okay, go to two.
So if there are two people living in that home.
41, if I remember from the list.
It goes up to, that's correct, $41,800. One of the problems that we see, not very often, but occasionally.
And you don't have to be in the low-mod area either.
No, okay. That's correct. When we start adding members to the household, we also have to add their income if they're working.
Of course, I assume that's
so. It's household income. It's not the homeowner's income.
All those 18 and up in the household.
18 and up. That's
right.
Correct. Yeah, anybody that files income tax. So,
if my wife and I were retired and didn't work and were on Social Security, I'd qualify for that phase two.
Yeah, you probably would.
I don't have a pension.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, okay, but
we'll
then
look
that depends.
To your application.
Yeah, and then it goes on up all the way up to eight people in the household.
Okay, the question is now that you qualify, you're not in the low mod. What do you qualify for? Does it depend on what your? Does it have to be a leaky roof? Does it have to be what?
Well, we have
don't
eligible.
We want to remodel your kitchen.
Exactly. Because, it's not remodeling wouldn't be included, or additions, or working on detached structures like garages or improvements in those areas.
What does it mean?
We have six standards, basically, and it's health, safety, energy efficiency would be the core of our program.
Okay, health, safety is obvious without much explanation, but energy efficiency?
Right,
a lot of people would be interested in that, right?
Sure.
Right. Jay? Upgrading your furnace and air conditioning.
Upgrading, that would be, you mean you'd have to change it?
Yeah, we'd change that out. If you had an older furnace, maybe even that was operating properly, but it was...
Very good. Okay, let's say you had an old gravity furnace, and you want to... Would you qualify for the expenditure to a 95% efficient furnace?
Correct.
And how much would the grind pay? Half of the expenditure?
No.
All of the expenditure?
We have a bid process with eligible occupants. We are eligible applicant. We go through a process where we do a full inspection of the property and determine the eligibility of the items needed. Then we write up a specification, and that would go out for a sealed bid. And then we honor the low bid amount, and then the contracts are signed, and the work is done based on that.
Okay, that's not unusual. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about one item now. We're simplifying it. You go out for a 95% efficiency furnace, and you get three bids, and the low bidder gets it, and you're... That makes sense.
Yeah, if all that was needed on that home was a furnace.
I just want to simplify the conversation.
Yeah, we go out for bids. The low bid on that specified product would be the winning bid that we honor. And the homeowner could choose a higher bidder and pay the difference out of pocket if they chose to do that.
That makes sense.
But most of the homeowners do choose the low bid amount, and then... The contracts are signed. We place a lien on the property for the amount of the loan. It's a deferred 0% interest lien that it needs to be paid back if the homeowner sells the property, turns it into a rental, no longer the occupant. And that money comes back into our program as a revolving amount.
I don't do that.
Fund.
I don't do any of those things. How do you get the money back?
No.
Oh, okay. I'm not going to rent my house. I'm going to stay there until I die.
Mm-hmm. It would stay on the property as a lien.
Then my wife sells the house at my demise, and she has to pay that amount back?
The lien would be satisfied at that time.
She doesn't have to give you the money back.
There's no payments required. It's paid in a lump sum. You can pay it off at
Lord
any time.
Lord have mercy. What a good program this is.
A lump sum, and it's 0% interest.
Okay. So. Let me give you an idea. For me, we're going to take a break now, so we'll have to talk about my idea later.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the Heights News and Views. As part of this station's weekly talk show format on Tuesdays from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on WHFR, making waves on 89.3 FM from the student radio station broadcasting from the Henry Ford Community College located in Dearborn, Michigan. Our guests today are Ronald Amon, director, and his assistant Chris Klimchuk of the Community and Economic Development Department of the City of Dearborn Heights. And I am your host, Ned Apigian, bringing you this program, The Heights News and Views, on the fifth Tuesday of any month. Now back to our guests and director Ron Amon. Ron, is there something you like?
Spots?
Oh. This is a good time. Let's give people a chance to listen to another voice besides ours.
Some non-commercial announcements. And the first one happens to be about home energy efficiency. So it's right on top of what we were talking about.
Fantastic.
We'll be right back, folks.
Thanks to improved home energy efficiency, the average American home uses 40% less natural gas than it did in 1970. But as a nation, we can improve and continue to reduce our carbon footprint. I'm Chris McGill of the American Gas Association. No matter what kind of heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system you have in your home, you can take a few simple steps to save money and improve your home's energy efficiency. Reduce your overall energy use by up to 30% by replacing furnaces and boilers with high-efficiency appliances. Use a programmable thermostat. Set it lower in the winter and raise the dial in the summer for significant savings. And use your landscaping to your advantage. Trees and shrubs are a natural way to cool your home and reduce your bills. And finally, sealing any drafty doors or windows will reduce your home's energy use. Now is the time to make the changes to make your home more energy efficient. For more tips, visit AGA.org.
A message from the American Gas Association.
Romancing the Figures is an art exhibition opening January 25th through March 16th, located in the McKenzie Fine Arts and Fitness Center here on the campus of HFCC. Six prominent artists from the Detroit area will showcase their work, which has been featured in exhibits such as the Detroit Institute of Art, the National Gallery of Zimbabwe, the Allen Stone Gallery in New York, and the Little Rock Art Center in Arkansas. Romancing the Figure exhibition hours are Monday through Wednesday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., Friday from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., or by appointment. For further information, visit hfcc.edu or call 313-845-6485.
Hi, this is Pat Frisco from the Spirits Rejoice radio program with another thought to consider. The creative artist has always worked outside the box. The truly creative artist has a unique perspective, a unique voice. Their works of art go beyond what a painting is supposed to look like, or a jazz or classical piece is supposed to sound like. As a result, these artists are often overlooked, underpaid, or totally neglected. Just look across the radio dial. But these artists always have a home at WHFR. You can tune into Spirits Rejoice Tuesdays from 6 to 10 p.m. or many of our other fine radio programs here at 89.3 WHFR Dearborn.
Well, we're back from the jazz festival, and get ready to go to Andiamo's sometime this next month, right, Jay?
Yeah, we're going to be doing that during the pledge drive, actually, this year, which will be the third week in April. But, always trying to find a way to help support a non-commercial operation, and I think a city can appreciate the problems of trying to keep it going without major funding sources.
Well, we try to be full of information here for our listeners. There's one thing I want them to clarify: by the money that you get and they put a lien on your house. Chris or Ron, would you want to take a chance?
Yeah,
If you, I qualify for the aid.
Right.
It costs $10,000. You put a lien on my house. Correct. Then what happens?
Yeah, the lien stays on the house. It does not accrue any interest. It's actually a loan.
Mm-hmm. Interest-free loan.
Interest-free loan. No payments are ever due. The loan never becomes payable unless the resident owner... The owner is no longer the resident of the house. That's correct. Some reason you were to move out of the house and turn it into rental property, that would trigger payment of the loan.
Okay, forget that. I'm going to sell the house to another single-family owner. What happens to me then?
The loan becomes
due
and payable before the new owners will take over. Whenever you buy a home, you do a title search. The title search will show... show our $10,000 lien that has to be taken care of before it can be transferred.
And your point is that $10,000 was spent 10 or 15 years before, and it's a lot less when it's being sold 10 or 15 years hence.
I mean, if inflation
not
is...
not free.
Not exactly.
It's not exactly. And who gets the money? The city?
Yeah, it's put back into that
the program.
Block grant program.
Okay.
It's recorded as a program income, and then we turn around and loan it back out again.
Okay, Jay, you want to say something?
Of course, you know, the amount, just if you talk about furnace upgrading, the amount you can save on energy costs each year, maybe over that 10-year period, is so significant that, you know, maybe, you know, you could, the homeowner has to think, well, I'm saving a lot here, and even though that extra money has to be paid for, in a way, it's more than made up for over those years in energy efficiency savings.
Certainly, Jay.
Well, you just made me feel a little better. Thank you.
Ned was talking about an old gravity furnace being replaced with a 95% efficiency furnace.
That's a logical thing that might happen.
The amount that you would save in expenses for natural gas, you would probably recover the cost of that furnace in 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, well, the
except fixing the high efficiency. I got one. I can't tell you the money it cost me to keep that thing running.
Well, the homeowners live with the benefit of the rehab, obviously. And exactly as Jay said, with the savings, there's no out-of-pocket expense. And then for a number of years after, they are able to save on energy costs
and
live with the benefit of the rehabilitation of their home.
I'll tell you the thing to do is do the geothermal. And that's worth the $15,000 I think it would cost.
Absolutely.
The geothermal program is fantastic. We try to do it in Dearborn and like sections of Dearborn Heights and sections of the city.
It's a win-win program.
That's a win-win thing. I wouldn't build a new house today or a project without doing it. You can incorporate your neighbor on either side as partnering in on the expense of it and take the advantage. I don't know if they would think that's too high tech. Is there a limit to what they think you're trying to do? Like, I want to put electric, this things on my roof, photoelectric cells. Would they go for that as a savings?
Would the program go for that?
Actually,
it would.
Okay, great. Now, you guys want to talk in the next 5 minutes for our break something about how the general fund is being helped in this process.
Yeah.
And I think that's important for any resident in any city to appreciate what that means.
Yeah,
Go ahead, Ron.
We use the term leveraging the general fund. The block grant program cannot write a check. Let's say the general fund needs $50,000. The block grant program cannot write a check from those federal funds and deposit it into the general fund for the city to use. What we can do is take some of the load off of the general fund by, for instance, this coming year, we're looking at about a $250,000 water main replacement project in the city.
That's not in the TIFA district.
No, it's not.
Okay, great, because the TIFA has money for things like that.
Well, even if
though they're shrinking.
Even if it were in the TIFA district, if it were it part of the TIFA low
funds.
Mod area,
right.
We could assist.
Uh-huh. Okay, great. Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're looking at doing.
That's great to know, but let's put it this way. If your budget is $800,000 and half of that is for our leveraging ability for city expenses for improvements, that's $400,000. Mm-hmm. Who decides of that $400,000? Now, you said that's $250,000. Who decides how much of that $400,000 goes where?
Actually, you do.
Who's
as
you?
A councilman.
Oh. Yeah, that was what I was getting to. It would seem to me the council should say, somebody should come, because I didn't realize this. There's $400,000 this year. We're proposing to spend $250,000 of it here, $100,000 here, and $50,000 there. What do you say?
Mm-hmm.
The
Community and Economic Development Department proposes and council disposes.
Okay. Which means most of the time they're voting on something they don't know what it is.
You said it.
Speak for yourself, Ned.
No comment.
I'd much rather have it presented the way I said. There's $400,000 to spend. If I spend $250,000 of it here, I want to be able to make a judgment on whether that's where I want to spend the $250,000.
Yeah, we are in the middle.
And only you know where it's possible and say, this is option A, mm-hmm. B, C combination of B and C. Is that what you do?
Sure. Yeah, we're actually right now, okay. We're in the middle of our comment period for our 2011-12
This is where we had a public
budget?
Hearing and
That's
nobody
correct.
Came.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we had our public hearing last week.
Nobody came.
We advertised it in the newspapers. We advertised it on our website.
Did you expect somebody to show up in the office, somebody someplace to say, this is what?
Truthfully, I didn't expect. I hoped.
Oh, okay.
I hoped somebody would come in with some ideas.
I'm great. This is educating me, that's for sure.
Yeah, we're in the, like I was saying, we're in the middle of this comment period, and we're looking for ideas.
I would think some of the department heads that have a specific need, uh-huh. I'm sure that the mayor knows and hasn't told me, you know, that this is an expenditure we need to make, uh-huh. and the other department, A, B, comes and says, these are expenditures. And I'm sure the mayor is saying, why don't we use this?
Yeah, actually, we have gotten proposals from several of the department heads so far.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, Ned, our job as community development, I feel, is really to take all those proposals, fit them into the puzzle of the federal requirements and the eligibility requirements of the projects, the caps that we work under. Certain areas of the budget are capped, like administration is capped at 20%, public services is capped at 15%. So we have to take all those proposals, distill them down, and fit them into a budget that we propose, and obviously work with the city council and the mayor to develop the best budget.
Why don't you take a couple minutes before our next break to explain how you had business with certain churches and the Salvation Army. You administer some of their programs. You, grants that they get that you administer for them because they fall within the city.
Well, those would be public service agencies, and they're really sub-recipients of our grant. So they're sub-grantees, and they obviously have to perform eligible services under the Black Grant Program.
But they're not taking part of our 800,000 mythical number.
Well, the total budget, that would be part
they
of that
have a
capped
budget.
Amount.
They have a budget that you're administering for them.
And we, well, no, they administer the programs, and we provide the funding, and it's a grant,
okay,
it's a
opposite.
Sub-grant. And then they would invoice us based on their services to Dearborn Heights residents of the grant that they received.
For
and we monitor
what kind,
their
what
programs.
What kind of services would the Salvation Army?
For instance, the Salvation Army. Let's talk about them
right,
specifically.
Right, because I saw their bill.
They offer counseling for people that are having a problem meeting their utility bills.
Okay.
They service people from all over the area. The people, the residents of Dearborn Heights that they service, they keep a log on.
Okay.
And every year they'll turn in an invoice to us and say, for instance, we spent so many hours servicing so many residents from the city of Dearborn Heights, and we'd like to be reimbursed for that.
Okay, that's not a home improvement, and it's not a budget leverage. What category would that be under?
That's called the public service portion of the grant.
And what is that usually?
More specifically, the limited clientele benefit.
I see.
Which there are limited clientele.
How many people do that besides the Salvation Army? Church X, Y, Z, what?
We have the Salvation Army. We have PALS.
PALS, police PALS. Athletically?
No, actually, PALS is a group home.
Personal assisted living services.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, there are a couple of group homes in Dearborn Heights.
Right.
Yeah, and we subsidize a portion of their budget. Access, the Arab Community Center.
What do they get from it?
They serviced about 100 and...
Oh, that's, again, people.
50 or 60 people from Dearborn Heights last year. I think their invoice was like $25,000 that they asked for. Of course, they're not going to get that.
I saw it, and I was wondering where it had to do with it.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've reached another obligatory announcement so people know who we are and what we're doing here. You are listening to the Heights News and Views as part of this station's talk show format on Tuesdays from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on WHFR, making waves on the 89.3 FM from the student radio station broadcasting from the Henry Ford Community College located in Dearborn, Michigan. Our guests today are Ronald Amon, director, and his assistant, Chris Klimchuk of the Community and Economic Development Department of the City of Dearborn Heights. And I am your host, Ned Apigian, bringing you this program, The Heights News and Views, on the fifth Tuesday of every month. And now back to our guests and director, Ron Amon of the Community Economic Development. Jay, you'd like to say something?
Well, I do the talk show on Friday, here's a little plug for that, the new WHFR Journal, and we primarily deal with Dearborn, although, of course, Dearborn Heights topics are significant, too.
Gives you an idea for Dearborn.
I know Barry Murphy is in a job with the city of Dearborn.
Murray, right,
who it's like a similar title. It is if you're aware of his position and you knew his correct name. is he doing similar things with block grants, or is the city of Dearborn's the scope different for his position, if you can comment?
No, any municipality that gets block grant funds has a certain restrictions that they have to adhere to.
It's the same deal.
And they're the same for every city, no matter how big they are, how small they are.
I just want to ask then, it seems that Barry Murphy gets publicity. He works with the East and West Downtown Dearborn Development Authorities, and I don't know if you have a development authority group similar to that.
We don't have a downtown. So.
Well, okay, we have two. Big deal.
Yeah.
But does your office in Dearborn Heights have much activity in terms of attracting new business and helping business that's already in the city?
Sure. About 7 years ago, the block grant money was used to redevelop the streetscape on Warren Avenue.
Oh.
Chris was an employee at that time. I'll let him tell you a little bit about it. There was a large amount of money that was spent there, doing the same thing that Barry does with the Downtown Development Authority in Dearborn.
Okay.
Yeah, again, there's a lot of similar projects between Dearborn and Dearborn Heights. I'll put in a plug. My cousin Michelle DeRose actually does about the same job that I do for Dearborn Heights on a little larger scale.
Okay.
Hello, Michelle, if you're listening. and I obviously, we talk a lot and about things happening in both the cities. But
yeah, their budget is probably twice the size.
Yeah, it is a bigger budget, and they have more economic development areas, like you said. But we did do a street improvement project, Warren Avenue, between Telegraph and Beach Daily. And we did a streetscape, put in new lighting, sidewalks, benches, rest area plazas, landscaping. And we did that to foster economic development in that sense. It wasn't direct economic dollars, but hopefully by doing that, we were sprucing up the area so that businesses would be more attractive.
It looks nice. The problem is the money to maintain it. And
yeah, what about parking? Dearborn got into paid parking in the West Dearborn area a few years back, and there's a big to-do about that. It's not bringing in the money, and they built the parking structures, and it's a huge real economic problem. Well, whether or not it seemed like a good idea at the time, but now they're constantly worrying about that. But you basically, Dearborn Heights, you don't have paid parking.
No,
we did an extensive parking study during that project where our consultant actually was on site viewing cars and motions of people and where everyone was going. Basically, the solutions were for the businesses to buy property behind them and create a parking lot.
Or adjacent to them.
Or to restructure some of the spots, which we tried to maximize on-street or side-street type parking. But that is a major challenge. And
we don't have the commercial. The only major thing we would have is the Heights Shopping Center, which was the former
Dearborn Drive-In.
Drive-In.
Yep.
Yeah, that
because your areas, your business areas are sort of spread out throughout Dearborn Heights. You don't have things.
But it is on major streets. That's
well, right. You wouldn't have what's called SAD or special assessment districts where the city collects extra tax dollars from the businesses in that area to provide them services, like I don't know, clearing their parking lots or whatever else. But you don't have any special assessment districts.
The only thing that comes close to that in Dearborn Heights is the TIFA district.
Ah, that's a show in itself, which we're going to do one day. It's very interesting.
Uh-oh. Look out, folks.
No, that's extremely. I don't know if Dearborn has a TIFA.
Yes, they do.
I think Carmen told me it's a small TIFA. It's not as large as ours.
It's actually
You'll like
than
that
ours.
Show, Dan, Jay, when we get to it. Anyway, let's talk about before the end of the show, the NSP project.
Okay.
You want to explain it to the people and how it works? And some people don't like it. They think it's a waste of money.
NSP stands for Neighborhood Stabilization Program. It's another grant offered by the federal government that Dearborn Heights
It's outside of your $800,000, your
that's
present
correct.
Program.
That's correct. It's a totally, it's a different grant.
Okay, you're administering it now. You weren't before.
Yeah.
Do they determine the money for that, and how do people get it? And
well, the formula for distributing and how much you get via the NSP grant is, I think there are four formulas for the NSP program, like the two formulas that we were talking about earlier for the block grant. And
So what happened in our case? We had 9, 10, or 12 houses or lots, and was there a dollar amount?
Actually, 14.
14, and there was a dollar amount associated with it when it happened?
Yeah, the grant was $1.6 million.
Okay, the city expended this money hoping to get the money back from the thing.
Well, we're going to get the money back.
I understand we're going to get it. We need it now, but where did we get the money to start this off? When is the federal government going to reimburse us? After the projects are completed, sold, or
well,
what?
Well, I've had the program since May of 2011, and I've turned in two requests for $50,000 each. We did receive one check, and last word is we should be getting the second one within the next week to 10 days.
Okay, what's happening?
Prior to that, the city has been reimbursed about $550,000.
Right, so we're about $600,000 reimbursed on $1.2 that we spent. Is that right?
We haven't spent it all yet.
We haven't spent it all yet. What happens in this program? Because I'm looking at the time.
Yeah, I see. We're running short.
Basically,
let me tell you.
If a piece of property is bad enough, we buy the house and tear it down, and then allow a developer to give it to them or something.
Sell
the property to be developed. The real
which we'd rather not do.
Well, actually, that makes more sense to me to take down something that's not very desirable, and then if you can join two 40-foot lots and then put it up on the market, just give it away to somebody so a developer can build a house, sell it, and then you get the taxes on it.
I agree.
That's the way but the problem is that we're rehabilitating. We're spending $100,000 to rehabilitate a $50,000 home that we're not sure we could sell. And looking at it, you wonder why anybody would do that. That seems to be the major question by people. It's an interesting program, Jay.
I'll refer back to the name of the program, the Neighborhood Stabilization Program, and that's what it's meant to do, is stabilize neighborhoods. Just like, if you have a bad tooth in your mouth and you pull it out, what happens to the rest of the teeth?
You stabilize
it. Yeah, exactly. If you don't pull it out, you have this rotten-looking tooth and not a very good smile. So what we do is we buy these properties through the block grant, through the NSP grant, and if they are, certainly if they are beyond rehabilitating, some of them are, the home is demolished.
Put up for sale.
And the empty lot is put up for sale. That's correct. Where it is able to be rehabilitated, we do that. And you're right. many of the homes we have spent $100,000 or more, and we don't expect to get back what we spent on the home when we put it up for sale.
Who gets
That's
the
not the idea behind the program. Okay. It's not a program to make money.
Right. Well, you know, the thing that interests me about it is you could go down the street, and there's 20 homes on either side of the street, and there might be one there that's empty, but it's not much different than the rest of the houses on the street, but that it qualifies to fix.
Mm-hmm.
Yet in my neighborhood, which doesn't qualify for the grant, there's a couple abandoned houses that it makes more sense to save those to protect the good neighborhood that they're in. They don't qualify because they're in the wrong place.
And we do that, Ned. Unlike the block grant, the NSP grant isn't relegated to any particular area.
I think
area
I asked that question once, and I don't know if I asked it to you. In my neighborhood, when we leave and you deliver me home, and I'll show you. Mm-hmm. I can't believe it. Two houses sitting there empty, and they haven't had a... Well... You'll have to wait till the next version of this program because we have come to an end and we are going to say goodbye and thank you for coming, Ron, and thank you for coming, Chris.
Thank you. Thanks for having us, Ned.
And I hope our listeners got a head start in trying to understand something about block grant programs. Thank you.
You have been listening to the Heights News and Views, a live talk show program part of the WHFR Tuesday Forum series of talk show programs from 1 to 2 p.m. The Heights News and Views is a program presented on the fifth Tuesday of any month. The program is devoted to interviews with prominent individuals on issues important to the residents of Dearborn Heights. You have been listening to WHFR 89.3 FM Dearborn, making waves from the campus of Henry Ford Community College, located in Dearborn, Michigan. You can re-listen to this and all of our other archived forum programs on the internet by going to our website at whfr.fm and select the Tuesday date for the program that you wish to rehear by selecting the desired date. Thank you very much for listening to the Heights News and Views today.
WHFR, Dearborn.